Welcome to The Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise and dive straight into the core of big ideas. Today, we're wrestling with a true philosophical heavyweight, Arthur Schopenhauer's monumental work, The World as Will and Representation.
That's right.
Our mission on this deep dive is to truly understand his radical take on the fundamental nature of reality, why life so often feels like an endless struggle, and to explore his surprising and frankly, pretty unsettling path towards tranquility.
And this isn't just some dusty old philosophy book either. Despite being penned centuries ago, Schopenhauer's ideas offer these profound, almost, you know, prescient insights into our modern experience.
Yeah.
His thoughts on human motivation, that relentless pursuit of desire, and the surprising role of art, well, they deeply resonate with contemporary psychology and existential thought today.
So we're going to unpack his famous opening line, "The world is my representation."
Right.
Exactly. And then uncover the raw, irrational force he believed drives absolutely everything. What's truly fascinating here is how these abstract philosophical concepts directly explain so much of what you might experience every single day.
Okay, let's unpack who Arthur Schopenhauer actually was. He definitely wasn't your typical ivory tower academic. He's often seen as this crucial bridge between the German idealism of his era and the existential, even psychoanalytic ideas that came much, much later. What made him so unique and, well, maybe a bit of an outcast?
Schopenhauer was a true intellectual maverick, you could say.
Yeah.
A synthesizer who really wasn't afraid to challenge the prevailing wisdom of his time. He picked up directly from Immanuel Kant's groundbreaking distinction between the world as it appears to us, what Kant called the phenomenal world.
Right, the world we see and touch.
Yeah, exactly. And the mysterious noumenal world, the thing in itself that exists independently of our perception. But here's where Schopenhauer got really audacious. He claimed he knew what that thing in itself actually was.
Wow, okay. That's a big claim.
It is. And he also seamlessly wove in Plato's theory of forms. And most distinctively, he was profoundly influenced by Eastern philosophy, particularly the Upanishads of Hinduism and the teachings of Buddhism.
Which was pretty uncommon for a Western philosopher back then.
Very uncommon. This audacious cross-cultural blend forged a truly distinctive and often brutally pessimistic voice that sharply contrasted with the overly optimistic rationalism of his contemporaries, like Hegel, whom he famously and quite publicly despised.
Ha, right. So this monumental work, The World as Will and Representation, it sounds incredibly ambitious. What's its central premise? What's the grand question Schopenhauer is trying to answer for us here?
Its mission is, well, nothing less than to answer the most fundamental questions about existence. Schopenhauer's central argument is built on this profound duality. The world we experience, he posits, is fundamentally composed of two aspects.
Two aspects, okay.
First, there's representation. This is the phenomenal world, the one we perceive with our senses, as it appears to our minds. It's the world of objects, space, time, causality, all structured by our intellect.
Got it. The world as we know it.
Exactly. Second, and much deeper, is the will. This is the noumenal reality, the thing in itself, the true underlying essence of everything. Mm. And crucially, he describes this will not as some rational or divine entity, but as a singular, blind, ceaseless, and irrational striving force that manifests in everything you see and feel.
Blind, ceaseless, irrational striving. Okay, so he's basically asking, what is the true nature of reality beneath the surface?
No.
Why is life so relentlessly filled with suffering? And maybe most importantly, can we ever truly escape it?
That's the core of it. Quite the ambition for one book.
Yeah, no kidding. Schopenhauer structured his work like this meticulous, almost scientific journey, breaking it down into four books. He kicks off Book I with that famous, almost jarring opening line, "The world is my representation." What does that truly mean for us, the listener, in our everyday experience?
This is where he really sets the stage, challenging our common sense realism right out of the gate. He means that the entire world, you perceive every object, every event, every sensation, it exists only in relation to your consciousness.
So it's not just out there independently.
Not according to him. It's not out there waiting for you to passively observe it. Instead, it's a mental construct actively shaped by the inherent structures of your mind. Space, time, and causality. These form what he calls the principle of sufficient reason.
It's just like our mind's operating system.
Kind of, yeah. It's our mind's inherent way of structuring reality. Demanding causes for effects, reasons for being, and organizing everything into a coherent, perceivable world. He's essentially saying your mind isn't a passive camera, but an active architect of the world you experience.
So it's not just that we interpret the world, but that our minds are actively creating the world we perceive, in a sense. Like we're wearing these specialized glasses that dictate how reality appears, and we can't ever take them off.
That's a great way to put it, and reinforces the radical nature of this concept.
And it leaves us with this big mystery. If our world is just a representation, what's the underlying reality being represented? What's really going on?
Precisely. And in book two, he offers his audacious answer. Here's where it gets really interesting. Schopenhauer argues that we have a unique double knowledge of our own bodies.
Double knowledge? How so?
Well, you perceive your body as an object, a representation, just like any other object in the world, right?
I see my hand, I feel the chair.
But crucially, you also have an immediate inner experience of it as the direct manifestation of your will, your desires, your intentions, your very striving. When you decide to move your arm, for example, it's not two separate events. The act of willing and the movement of the arm are one and the same, just experienced from different perspectives.
Ah, okay. So the feeling of deciding and the physical action are just two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. This direct internal experience of our own willing is our unique privilege window to the thing in itself.
That's fascinating, using our own bodily experience as the key. But how does he then jump from my individual body's will to claiming this same force is the underlying reality of everything in the universe? That seems like a massive, almost, well, audacious leap.
It absolutely is a huge metaphysical claim, and it's totally essential to his philosophy. He makes this incredibly bold, analogical leap. If your immediate inner experience reveals the will as the driving force behind your body, then Schopenhauer extrapolates that this same singular, blind, irrational, and endlessly striving cosmic force must be the fundamental reality behind every single thing in the universe.
Everything. Like rocks and planets, too.
Everything. Every representation, every object, from basic physical forces like gravity to the growth of plants, the instincts of animals, and our own conscious actions, it's all just an outward manifestation and objectification of this one universal undifferentiated will. It's the engine driving existence itself, a blind, purposeless engine.
Wow. That portrayal of the will as this relentless, suffering force sounds incredibly bleak. I mean, if life is fundamentally about insatiable striving, is there any respite in Schopenhauer's philosophy, or is it just, you know, a journey into pure despair?
It can feel that way sometimes.
I imagine he wouldn't leave us without some path, though. And he points to art as one of them, doesn't he?
Indeed he does. In book three, Schopenhauer turns back to the world as representation, but from a different, maybe more hopeful angle. He argues that in aesthetic contemplation, when you truly lose yourself in a beautiful painting, a moving piece of music, or a majestic natural landscape.
That feeling.
You momentarily transcend your individual will. In those moments, you become a pure, will-less subject of knowledge, free from desire, anxiety, and the constant striving.
So you escape yourself? Kind of?
In a way, yes. In this unique state, you grasp Platonic ideas, which for him are the timeless universal archetypes that underlie the individual things we perceive. It's a temporary blissful liberation from the constant push and pull of the will.
So it's not just a momentary distraction like watching TV, but a genuine escape, a different state of being.
He argues it's a profound shift in perspective, yeah. And he places music on a very special pedestal, doesn't he? It's more than just a beautiful sound. It's almost sacred.
It seems that way in his writing. Why music specifically?
For Schopenhauer, music is the highest art form, operating on a totally different level. It doesn't just represent Platonic ideas like painting or sculpture might. It is, in his view, a direct copy or expression of the will itself.
A direct copy. Whoa.
Yeah. This is why music's effect is so much more powerful and penetrating than other arts. It speaks directly to the fundamental reality that flows through us all, bypassing the intellect and going straight to the core of our being without needing the mediating forms of the other arts. It's like feeling the will directly.
Okay, that explains why music can hit us so hard sometimes. So back to the will driving everything. If life is fundamentally this ceaseless striving and happiness is just, you know, temporary relief, does that mean existence is just one long, drawn-out suffering?
Unfortunately, from his perspective, pretty much, yes. This final book, Book 4, addresses the ethical consequences of his worldview. Schopenhauer famously, and quite memorably, said, "Life swings like a pendulum backward and forward between pain and boredom."
Pain and boredom. That's quite the summary.
It is. Happiness, for him, isn't really a positive state, but merely the temporary cessation of desire, of pain. As soon as one desire is fulfilled, boredom sets in, or a new desire immediately emerges. It's an endless, unsatisfying cycle that defines our default existence.
Gosh, that sounds eerily familiar to anyone who's ever gotten really excited about buying a new gadget, only for the thrill to fade within, like, a week.
Exactly.
So Schopenhauer is essentially saying this hedonic treadmill isn't just some modern phenomenon, but a fundamental truth of existence itself.
That's his argument. It's baked in.
But he does offer a path out of it, right? A way to find lasting peace. Though I'm guessing it's not an easy one.
He does, but it's radical. True morality, for him, begins with compassion. He calls it Mitleid. It's the intuitive recognition that the distinction between individuals is ultimately an illusion.
An illusion? How so?
Because we are all ultimately manifestations of the same suffering will. So to hurt another is, metaphysically speaking, to hurt oneself.
Okay. That's a deep foundation for compassion.
But the ultimate salvation, the true and lasting peace, comes from the denial of the will to live itself. Now, this isn't suicide.
Right, you mentioned that.
Yeah, Schopenhauer actually viewed suicide as a desperate affirmation of the will, a final tragic act of wanting things to be different, wanting out. Instead, he meant a quiet, internal turning away from life's incessant strivings.
How do you do that?
Through practices like asceticism, austerity, self-discipline, and renunciation, consciously giving up worldly desires. It's about detaching from the will's endless demands, leading to a profound inner tranquility, much like the Buddhist concept of nirvana, quieting the inner storm.
Quieting the storm. So what are the big actionable takeaways from this deep dive into Schopenhauer's truly challenging thought? What should really stick with us?
Well, first, there's the primacy of the will over the intellect. Schopenhauer radically flips our understanding of rationality. He argues your intellect isn't the master, but more like a clever servant.
Like a spin doctor.
Yeah, a kind of advanced PR agent for your deeper, irrational will, your gut instincts, your unconscious drives. This means your rational mind is often just busy rationalizing what you already want on a deeper, non-conscious level.
That really does feel like a seismic shift from traditional Western thought, which so often puts reason on a pedestal. It feels almost Freudian, pre-Freud.
It absolutely prefigures Freudian concepts. You saw it clearly in human behavior. Our desires often lead, and our reasons scramble to catch up and justify them. Then there's the pervasive metaphysical pessimism and the ubiquity of suffering.
Yeah, that's hard to miss.
Suffering isn't just an accident or bad luck. It's an inherent feature of existence, rooted in the will's insatiable striving. It's a stark, but he would argue, honest diagnosis of the human condition. Life is fundamentally defined by dissatisfaction and the endless pursuit of goals that never bring lasting contentment.
It's a tough pill to swallow, definitely.
But one he believed essential for gaining wisdom.
And we can't ignore the strong influence of Eastern thought here. He was really ahead of his time in the West, seeing these parallels.
Absolutely. He explicitly compares his concept of representation to the Hindu concept of Maya, the veil of illusion that hides true reality. And his path of denying the will to achieve tranquility clearly mirrors the Buddhist concept of nirvana, that state of release from suffering. This synthesis was truly groundbreaking for a Western philosopher of his time.
It really brings together different worlds of thought. Schopenhauer was also such a master of language, wasn't he? His writing is just full of these memorable lines that really drive his points home, making these huge ideas kind of stick.
He truly was a real aphorist at times. Take his opening line again. The world is my representation. This isn't just a philosophical statement. It's an immediate challenge to our common sense realism. It's like a gauntlet thrown down, forcing us to question the very nature of our perceived reality from page one.
That one hits you right away. It's almost unsettling how it forces you to think about what real even means, isn't it? Like, what am I actually experiencing right now?
Exactly. Then there's that famous one. Life swings like a pendulum backward and forward between pain and boredom. This just powerfully summarizes his view of human suffering, that endless cycle of desire, fleeting satisfaction, and the subsequent ennui or new desire that pushes us onward.
A pretty bleak but incredibly vivid image, certainly. It captures that feeling of, is this all there is after achieving something?
It really does. And for him, from the will's perspective, there isn't lasting contentment. But in those moments of detachment, maybe. And this one on music captures that potential escape. Music is a copy of the will itself. They speak only of shadows, but it speaks of the thing itself.
Right, the direct line to the will.
Yeah, it explains why music holds such a profound and unique place in our lives, bypassing intellect to speak directly to our deepest being, to the very essence of the cosmic will. It connects us to that fundamental reality.
Powerful. Any last one that really captures his ethical view, his vision for how we should treat each other, given the shared reality?
Yes, this one is startling. The tormentor and the tormented are one.
Wow.
This really underpins his ethics of compassion. It reveals the illusory nature of individual separateness from the perspective of the unified will. It suggests that when we inflict suffering, we are, on some deep metaphysical level, ultimately hurting ourselves, as all beings are just manifestations of the same fundamental striving, suffering force.
That puts empathy on a whole different level. This all sounds very abstract, though. But you mentioned these ideas actually offer profound insights for navigating modern life. So what does this mean for you, the listener? How can we apply Schopenhauer's insights today?
Well, first, Schopenhauer gives us this powerful lens for understanding human motivation and desire. Recognizing that our rational minds often serve deeper, sometimes irrational impulses can lead to greater self-awareness. Think about that hedonic treadmill we talked about.
Right, always chasing the next thing.
Always chasing the next high, the next purchase, the next achievement, only to find the satisfaction is fleeting. Schopenhauer explains why that happens. The insatiable nature of the will and understanding that can help you manage those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe true satisfaction isn't in getting the next thing.
He also gives us a philosophical reason for why we crave things like art and nature and why they can feel so deeply restorative, almost like a cleanse for the soul.
Absolutely. The therapeutic power of art and nature is a direct application. Losing yourself in music or a beautiful landscape isn't just a nice distraction. He argues it's a genuine momentary escape from the ego and its anxieties. It's a way to quiet the will and find peaceful contemplation, stepping outside that endless cycle of striving, even if just for a short while.
And his emphasis on cultivating genuine compassion. How does that translate practically, especially in our often pretty contentious world?
Well, this insight can help us reduce judgment. When you see others acting out of anger or greed or fear, his philosophy suggests you can view it not just as a personal failing on their part, but as a manifestation of that universal suffering will that also drives you.
Seeing the shared struggle beneath the surface?
Exactly. It fosters a deeper sense of connection and empathy because you recognize a shared existential predicament beneath all the individual differences. It's a potentially powerful tool for understanding, maybe even forgiveness.
So maybe a healthy dose of pessimism might actually be good for us. It sounds so counterintuitive in our culture that pushes constant positivity.
Right. In a culture sometimes prone to toxic positivity, Schopenhauer's realistic pessimism can actually be a valuable antidote.
Look.
By accepting that suffering and struggle are inherent parts of life, you can potentially become more resilient.
Oh.
It prepares you for setbacks.
Yeah.
It allows you to find a certain dignity, not necessarily in constant happiness, but perhaps in gracefully enduring existence. It lowers your expectations of what the world owes you, which can, ironically, reduce disappointment and foster a more grounded perspective. Mm. It's about facing reality head on, not escaping it with false optimism.
So what this deep dive into Schopenhauer leaves me pondering is how profoundly unsettling, yet maybe strangely liberating, it is to consider that our constant striving might not be for some grand purpose, but just the universe's blind energy playing itself out through us.
Mm.
It truly reframes the whole quest for happiness, doesn't it? It makes you ask, is peace really found in satisfying desires, or maybe, just maybe, in learning to simply observe the will's relentless push within us without being swept away by it?
Indeed. I think you should walk away from this with a profound new perspective on your own consciousness, the real origins of your desires, and the deep roots of suffering. Schopenhauer provides this framework for understanding art's unique power and the deep metaphysical foundation for compassion that goes beyond just following rules.
Yeah.
And while his ultimate solution of ascetic denial is, let's face it, pretty radical for most of us.
Minor statement.
His diagnosis of the human condition is undeniably powerful and still feels deeply relevant today. This challenging, dark, yet brilliantly coherent philosophy paradoxically offers a unique path towards a profound kind of tranquility and a deeper sort of peace.
We hope this deep dive into Schopenhauer has given you something truly thought-provoking to chew on. What if true peace isn't found in satisfying the will, but in learning to quiet its relentless striving within us? Something to ponder until next time. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhotra Foundation.